Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight on our Medical Monday, we're talking about anxiety and panic attacks. Are you troubled by them? What can be done about treating them? Where do they come from? Of course, my guest is Dr. Nicole Swiner, author and family practitioner. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ashley calling from Upper Marlboro, Maryland. Ashley, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I actually deal with, for the last 4 years, I've been dealing with anxiety and panic attacks. And 2 years ago, I was actually diagnosed with PTSD also.
Mm-hmm.
So
as a result of what?
From domestic violence.
Okay, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. So from that, I've been on a host of different medications. And at the moment, I'm actually on Seroquel, Prozac, hydroxyzine, and Xanax, which is a whole lot. But none of them actually seem to help in social situations when I have to go out and be around people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get really freaked out, I guess, from the PTSD portion. And I see a therapist also, but I'm just trying to figure out whether or not those medications work well together for having generalized anxiety disorder and PTSD, mm-hmm. or what else I can do. Because, I mean, it's really taking a toll to where I can't even work anymore. I'm almost full disability.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry to hear that, by the way. Good for you, though, for actually talking about it, going and seeing a doctor about it, following through, seeing a psychiatrist and all that. That's really good. So the medications that you're on do a fairly good job, and everybody is different. So everyone's chemistry and chemical makeup is different, so you may have to see what works for you. But the medicines that you're on do generally work fairly well for generalized anxiety, panic attacks, even depression, if there is any history of depression. For PTSD, particularly if you're having what you described as agoraphobia, meaning the phobia of going out and being in large crowds and being triggered by that, a lot of that has more to do with the therapy part. So the person that you're working with should be addressing the stress of being out around large crowds, may even have to talk to you about some of that immersion therapy that I alluded to earlier, where you recreate those moments and you talk through, how am I going to handle being in this environment? You know, how do I help bring my body down? How do I help my body go through its coping mechanisms when I'm in this situation? So medications may not always help you. I mean, you said Xanax?
Yes.
You have the Xanax that, and again, you know, always got to talk to your doctor, but Xanax is something you can take pretty quick at the time of feeling that way.
Generally they tell me to just take that, and I mean, it helps me, but mm-hmm. I mean, it still kind of sucks to have to deal with that all the time.
Really, really quick, Dr. Swiner, before I let Ashley go, how much, if she doesn't believe that the medications are helping, how much work and what kind of work needs to be done to kind of address, you know, whatever issue she may be feeling?
Mm-hmm. Doing exactly what she just did is asking really good questions and saying, okay, the medicines work good for this, but it's not quite working in this specific condition or this specific environment. And hopefully you have, you know, a good enough and comfortable relationship with the person that's prescribing your medications where they can hear you and say, okay, well, maybe Seroquel isn't the best idea, or maybe we'll switch you to something different or take you off that altogether and just focus on when you're out in social environments all by itself. So just being as clear and direct and advocating for yourself when you do go to talk to your physician about, okay, this is fine, but this is still the problem.
Okay. Ashley, thank you so much for your phone call, and certainly good luck and good health to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Ben, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling, Ben. What's on your mind?
Well, thank you both for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, just regular stress, and just wondering in terms of panic attacks, can it manifest into actual chest pain? I've got my heart checked out, and the heart's fine, blood pressure's fine, and just occasionally and randomly having a decent amount of chest pain that lasts for a few minutes or so. And it's not at any times that I can pinpoint that it's associated with something particularly stressful at the time. And is that a panic attack?
Mm-hmm. It certainly sounds like it, yeah. And you know, you mentioned something very important, is that you've already been checked out. You've had your heart test. You've had, you know, had an exam. You went to the doctor and you talked about it. So, yes, because you've had any medical issue with your heart ruled out with being examined and going to see somebody, absolutely, panic attacks can feel just like the real thing. They can feel like an impending doom. They can feel like death literally is happening. It can cause your adrenaline. It can cause your stress hormones, your cortisol, all those things to peak so that you can feel pounding, tightness, shortness of breath, sweating, which can be very similar to the signs of a heart attack. It can feel just like that. I mean, it feels very real to some people. I mean,
yeah.
Stress, anxiety, and panic can cause actual, you know, physiologic changes in your body to make you feel like it's, you know, it's a medical emergency.
Hmm. Okay. And even if it comes around when you're literally, like, on the couch watching TV or even watching mm-hmm. your son do an exercise or something like that, it can just come that randomly with nothing associated with it specifically that you think would be extremely stressful?
It can, unfortunately. It's more often triggered by something, but it doesn't always have to be. So if nothing else, again, check in with your physician, talk to your doctor. If something like that is happening more than, you know, 5 minutes at a time, I would definitely seek urgent care just, you know, or emergent care just to be on the safe side. But, yes, mm-hmm. unfortunately, those things can happen randomly.
Okay. Great. Thank you so much.
Ben, thank you so much for calling. Before I go back to the phone lines, I do want to drill down a little bit more about that, because he brings up an interesting point that it's my understanding that while there may be triggers, events, memories, and the like, but where might an anxiety attack come from for someone who's just sitting around and then all of a sudden they are hyperventilating? They may be, you know, looking around, feeling panicked for no reason whatsoever. Is that psychosomatic, all in their mind? Is it physiological? What is that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it could be a combination of things. I mean, the mind is a very mysterious thing. The mind is made up of all kinds of memory cells and memory muscles and things of that nature. So we are often triggered by things that we don't even realize we're triggered by, whether it be a familiar scent, a song, a show, something that someone said. You know, that can trigger us to remind us of some horrible incident that happened way back when that we don't even realize until much later. So, you know, it's sort of psychosomatic, but I don't want to make people feel like, you know, they're making it up, you
mm-hmm.
know, because our minds actually do remember things that we may not completely realize actually happened to us. You know, there are deeply, deeply rooted things that sometimes we push down and suppress that are triggered by certain small, subtle things. So that's one, you know, possibility. The other possibility is you could actually have something physiologic happening. I mentioned having thyroid issues. You know, your thyroid gland, which sits on top of your Adam's apple, is an actual hormonal-related gland. So if you have any abnormalities where your thyroid levels are either too high, too low, your kidneys have adrenal glands that sit on top of the kidneys. They control cortisol and other stress-related type hormones. If you have an excess of these things, whether it be because of some medical condition or some external medicine you're taking, whether it be a supplement that you don't know much about and you started taking it from the grocery store, or an actual pharmaceutical medication, you know, they can cause those hormones to be too elevated, and they can cause you some of these signs and symptoms of anxiety.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We're talking about panic attacks, anxiety attacks, and how they're treated, and where they come from. All of those questions certainly we're addressing tonight. Carol, calling from Woodbridge, Virginia. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi.
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 First of all, thanks for taking my call tonight.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And I want to thank you all for discussing this topic. I am learning more from this tonight than what I've really learned from the psychiatrist that's seen my granddaughter. This is for my granddaughter. About since she was 8 years old, when she was 8 years old, she'll be 17 next week, the 26th. And we just learned of this early this year that she was sexually molested when we sent her on a summer vacation to spend time with family in New York. And it just came out. And so the doctor diagnosed her with severe PTSD. Mm-hmm. She gets these panic attacks. She has tried to commit suicide so many times because she's trying to get it out of her brain, mm-hmm. out of her head. And it's sometimes she's living with me now because her mom don't know how to deal with it. She has other siblings, and it's just so overwhelming. And she's living with me and my husband now here in Woodbridge, but it's so bad. Sometimes I'm at work, I have to go get her from school because she'll be sitting in class and she just have these panic attacks. She can't sleep at night because she's getting scary dreams. The doctor prescribed a sleeping medication, but it has this after effect. We'll be just going to the emergency room, or she'll be just admitted because she tried to commit suicide 3 times. I don't know how to deal with it. See, I'm a Jamaican, and I've never seen this before. We have never dealt with this in our family. And, you know, so...
Carol, let me say this. Being a Jamaican has nothing whatsoever to do with whether or not. It may have more to do with these issues not being brought up. But where you're from has nothing to do with mental health.
Yes, nobody talked to us about it.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. I've never had to deal with this. We have never dealt with this before, so I don't know how to deal with it. I want to know, how can I help her? I mean, mm-hmm. what can I do to help her?
Yeah, I'm so sorry. That sounds so, so sad. I'm so sorry. How old did you say she was again?
She's going to be 17 the 26th of October, next week, actually.
Okay. Have you ever attended one of her doctor visits with her?
She has therapy come to the house, and we go to the therapist once a month. So she has two type of therapists coming. One comes to the house, and another one we go and see once a month. The one that comes to the house like 2-3 times a week. But I really don't want to. I don't sit in the session with her, the one at the house. But when I go to see the other one, I sit in that session and I listen. Some of the things she don't want me to be there to talk to the therapist about. So.
Okay. So, that's a really, really, really difficult situation. I'm very, very glad, you know, you mentioned, growing up, you never really talked about this and talked to anyone about this, but I'm so glad that you've gotten her some help despite that. So kudos to you for really taking this seriously, and I pray that this gets better. You just have to keep trying. It sounds like you have a really good setup for both in-house and outpatient therapy, so you have to keep with that. And at some point you may want to, I know that she may not want you to always be there, but you may even talk to her counselor about doing a form of family counseling.
Okay.
So
okay.
that you can actually learn how to help her when she's in that moment.
Okay.
So that it's directed, directly at you and your husband at saying, okay, well, when this happens with her, this is what you can do.
Okay.
Because it will also potentially take a strain on your stress level. I mean, you could barely tell us the story without, sounding tearful, which is a very natural, as I'm sure any of us would feel the same way. You may need to have your own individual counseling.
Okay.
Deal with just the anxiety of dealing with her. So all I can say is stay prayerful and keep going.
Okay.
Keep going.
Okay.
Well, Carol, thank you.
I'm sorry. And the medications aren't helping. Talk to her doctor about that, too. Say, this is not helping. We have to try something different.
Well, do you think she's going to be like this forever?
Prayerfully not. But she may have to continue working on this for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm. Carol, thank you so much for your phone call. And certainly we wish your daughter the best and good health. I need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Laurel calling from Clinton, Maryland. Laura, stay with us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Panic and anxiety attacks on this Medical Monday. We'll be back in just a moment. Sirius XM Channel 141, I'm Harold Fisher. We continue our discussion on this Medical Monday about anxiety and panic attacks with Dr. Nicole Price-Swiner. Back to the phone lines. Laura, calling from Clinton, Maryland. Thanks for hanging on, Laura. What's on your mind?
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, if somebody has experienced a panic or anxiety attack, how likely is it that they will experience another? or can this be something that might be just a one-time occurrence?
Mm-hmm. That's a good question. I can't quote numbers, but depending on what, you know, the surrounding issues are, you know, if it's a traumatic event that's happening or something that's stressful just for that moment, it may just be a once-in-a-lifetime thing. But again, don't quote me. I would guess that the majority of folks who have experienced a panic or anxiety attack before will likely go on to experience, or at least are at risk of experiencing another one. I don't want to misquote numbers to you, but I would just say in my experience, once you've had one, it may be very, very likely for you to have another one. Doesn't mean that you can't overcome it, though, and, you know, do deep breathing and get away from the situation and talk yourself through and all of that. But I would think that you may be more likely than not to have the risk of having another one.
Okay.
Well, Laura, thank you so much for your phone call.
Okay.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Swiner, are there different kinds of anxiety disorders? Is there a hierarchy of disorders?
Not necessarily. It's just off the top of my head. There's a difference between anxiety and panic.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is panic disorder with or without that agoraphobia that I mentioned earlier. Agoraphobia meaning a social phobia, being out in large crowds or being overwhelmed by being around a lot of unfamiliar people. But as far as I'm concerned, there's no true higher, you know, there's not like a mild, moderate, severe, or stage one, stage two, stage three, per se. But there, you know, so the things I can think of are generalized anxiety, panic with or without agoraphobia, and then there is actually a separate social phobia alone, or phobia of certain things, you know, phobia of spiders, phobia of flying. But there, we seem to kind of clump all of those into the generalizing anxiety disorder classification for the most part.
To my layman's ear, when our listeners have mentioned a great many of the medications that they've been taking, it seems to me that almost all of them are designed to quote unquote bring them down. I would imagine they are the psychotropic drugs, barbiturates and the like, the kind that are supposed to relax them. Is that the case?
For the most part, yes. So if we're talking about pure panic, where it happens just once in a while or it's triggered by a specific moment, then a lot of the medications that we use, be it Xanax, Valium, clonazepam, some of those that we mentioned from a previous caller, Ativan, you take only at the time that you need it. So those are called benzodiazepines, and they respond or sit on a receptor in the brain that's similar to that of alcohol, and that is to kind of bring you down for a moment, and then it brings you back to baseline. Some of the other medications that were mentioned, I think someone said Zoloft and Prozac, those types of medicines are SSRIs, you know, some of the serotonin receptor inhibitors. So we're familiar with Zoloft and Prozac and Paxil. They've been along for many years. They actually kind of balance out things, the stress level hormones. So serotonin in the bloodstream, dopamine in the bloodstream, epinephrine in the bloodstream, they kind of get an equal balance between all of these things. And then Seroquel, which, you know, we don't use that purely for anxiety a lot. We use that for some of the more atypical things like bipolar disorder. We have off-label uses for it. Like, we use it for things that it wasn't really made for because we know it helps.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a totally different class of medication, the atypical antipsychotics that we may use off and on to see if it will help. But really, the pure anxiety medications are the benzos or the SSRIs, and then there's Buspar, which is kind of in a category on its own, and that's just for keeping your anxiety level down to a low level.
How much individual work outside of drug therapy can be done to address these issues? I'll give you an example. I'll use myself. Mm-hmm. I was bitten in the face by a dog when I was 5 years old. As a result, I don't do dogs.
Right.
Okay, that's, I mean, you know, cause and effect, I get it. However, probably over the past 10 years, I decided to, I just made a decision that, from an intellectual standpoint, I realized that not all dogs are dangerous. But on the other hand, I realized that all dogs have teeth. Mm-hmm. And while owners always say, well, my dog doesn't bite, in my mind, I say your dog doesn't bite you.
Right.
But with all of that said, I'm not at a point where I'm ready to pet every, you know, Lassie, Fido, and Spot that, mm-hmm. you know, that comes around and rubs up against my leg. But saying that I would allow a dog to rub up against, you know, my pant leg or something is a great deal of progress because years ago I was not even interested in being in the same room with them.
Mm-hmm.
So with that said, can someone decide that they're not going to be afraid or have these attacks as it relates to certain traumatic things that may have happened in their life? Or is my situation unique? Or is it that that thing maybe happened so long ago and that it was not so traumatic that I'm able to do that?
It depends. Kudos for you. Mm-hmm. Kudos to you.
I'm not going to buy a dog now. I mean,
no.
You know, you're not going to see that. You know,
trying. You're trying. And what you are doing is your own self-imposed immersion therapy. So you are allowing yourself slowly, baby steps but surely, to be in the same room, and then maybe allow him to pet. You know, to rub your leg, and then you might one day pet the dog on the head, you know. So what you've done is you have forced yourself to be in that moment, to be present, to be in the same environment, literally, but take baby steps. And that's, you know, it all depends on how long, like you said, how long ago the episode was, the traumatic event, how much willpower the person has to get over this fear. You know, I myself had a horrible fear of flying, not to the point of having to take meds, but definitely to the point of having to have a cocktail or two before getting on the plane.
Okay. Well, there you did mention that some of these drugs have the same effect as alcohol.
That is right.
Yeah.
But what my husband and I did, and actually I didn't even realize it was intentional on his part, was to travel more to get me on a plane more frequently. So now I'm to the point where I actually don't always have sweaty palms getting onto a plane or if there's turbulence. I can talk myself through it because I've done it more regularly. I've done it more frequently. But not everyone can do that. So it depends on where you are. It depends on where your mindset is. It depends on if you have good support or not, you know, i.e. me having my husband right next to me on the plane so I can grab his hand. If you can't really do it alone, though, talk to your doctor because there are therapists that do this. It's their job to do this type of therapy. They can help you through that.
How do you talk someone down, so to speak, if they are having a panic attack? What do you do?
Mm-hmm. You may not be able to, depending on where they are, but the best thing if you're with someone who's having an attack is to try to get them to take nice, slow, deep breaths, so that they're slowing down their heart rate, slowing down their breathing, their respiratory rate, reassuring them, but not pushing them. You know, so, for instance, someone who's bringing a dog to you, if you're having a moment, having an anxious moment, for them to try to push, oh, no, it's okay, he's off, he's fine, you know, play with him. You don't want to force the person into something that they're already definitely afraid of and they're having an actual response to. You want to remove them, if you can, safely, and help them to take deep breaths and breathe. So even though you may not be able to talk them out of the feeling that they're having, because, again, whatever's happening feels very real to us. And for some, in that moment, it could actually make it worse for you to be like, you know, to make them feel like it's fine, you're making a big deal out of it, it's nothing. But you do want to get them to kind of breathe so that their body can actually have a moment to relax. And then if they need to actually get to a place where they can get some help, get to their doctor, you know, get to their pastor, get to the emergency room, then you may have to help them do that.
Some final thoughts about those who are having anxiety or panic attacks as far as seeking help?
Please, yes. So hopefully the majority of my listeners or your listeners, my listeners, our listeners, have a primary care physician or provider that they're already linked up with. So I'm hoping that you already have that family, pediatrician, internal medicine doc that you call your own that you can reach out to and make an appointment with, nurse practitioner, physician assistant, et cetera. If you don't, find one. You know, every family should have their own home, you know, home for health care. That definitely should be the first person you reach out to. If you have a church home, if you're in a church organization, you can reach out to some ministers that are there, your pastor, particularly for ministers that have a background in therapy, in social work, things of that nature, so that they can help you with the counseling part. And then there are plenty, hopefully, there are plenty of mental health facilities, clinics in your area. You can always Google psychological centers, mental health centers, crisis centers that you can call and reach out. You know, the 24-hour hotline you can call and reach out for immediate help if you can't reach out to anyone else.
Okay. Well, Dr. Nicole Price-Weiner, always good to talk to you. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
And the next time you are in D.C., please give us a call.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah, give us, you know, keep us abreast of what you're doing, because you're always doing something, always up to something good. So, again, doctor, thank you so much.
Yes, reach out to me as well, docshunter.com. Thanks, guys.
All right. Again, what is that?
Docswiner.com.
Docswiner.com. Thank you so much. That is The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Monday, October 17th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can reach me at on Facebook at Harold Fisher, WHUR, or Twitter at H Fisher, WHUR. Now stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3.